Now, at the same time, I was doing another sadhana, another practice, which was that Maharaji said, Ram Dass should not touch money. See, now you can interpret that at many levels. See, I mean, now I interpret that my mind shouldn't cling or fixate on money. That allows me to have a credit card. But in those days, I took it literally. I shouldn't touch money. So what I did was one of my friends, my guru bhai, would be a bag person. They'd carry my money. So we get on the bus, they'd pay my bus fare. See, that worked out fine until I got to hate them all. Now I was in a predicament because I had nobody who I didn't hate, who I hadn't alienated, to be my bag person. Now, from the hotel to the temple is 8 miles. So what I found was I got to the position where there was a day where everybody got on the bus and I had no money to get on the bus, so I had to walk. All the way to the temple, I walked knowing what fun they were all having at the temple. Because they got there in about half hour, and it was going to be about 3 hours for me. It was through the backwoods. And so I was getting more and more angry. I was getting furious. And when I came over looking down on the temple, I saw them all laughing. And they were all hanging around Maharaji. And he has obviously spent much more time with them today than any other day. And I was full of loathing and hatred and hated myself and felt so impure to even walk into the temple. And I walked in, and by then, they had just, as I came down, they were all had their lunches. They were sitting on a porch with leaf plates and their food. And I came in, and they might have been talking about me, I don't know, but one of the people who I especially despised came up with a leaf plate of food and offered it to me. See? And I took it and I threw it at him. See? I remember the moment very clearly. I mean, it was a... and I heard Maharaji from across the courtyard,
Ram Dass, Ram Dass, Ram Dass.
And I looked over at him, and at that moment I hated him too, right? And I went across the courtyard pissed. I mean, I was really angry. And I sat down in front of him. And I looked up at him and I was like, you know, my bones were aching. You know how that gets when you're really constricted. And he looks at me and says, something troubling you? I said, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What is it? I said, I hate all of them. And I said, and I hate myself. And he said, do you love me? And I looked at him, and it just fell apart. I opened and I started to sob, absolutely sob. I said, I love you. And I was sobbing, and he went and he sent for milk, and he was pouring milk down my throat, and he was patting me on the head. And I went through the whole catharsis and all of that. And then he came up to me, kind of nose to nose. He leaned over on his tucket, and he said, "I told you to love everyone." I said, "But you told me to tell the truth. And the truth is, I don't love everyone." And he leaned forward and he said to me, "Ram Dass, love everyone and tell the truth." At that moment, what I experienced were two things. First was I experienced a coffin in front of me, in which who I thought I was in the coffin. Who I thought I was somebody whose truth was that they didn't love everyone. And what he was describing to me was who I would be when I finished being who I thought I was. Can you hear that? Is that... Yeah. And the other thing was that at that moment I turned and I looked over at my fellow guru bhai, sisters and brothers, and I saw that at one level I had all this righteous indignation about them, but one little flip of consciousness and I saw how incredibly beautiful each one of them was. And I loved them so deeply. Jiao. And that was the teaching. And I realized that since that time, for 20 years, I have been learning that teaching. I have been letting, and what I realize is that when I don't feel that love for another human being, I hear Maharaji saying, "Ram Dass, love everyone and tell the truth." Then he said to me afterwards, he said, "Ram Dass, give up anger and I'll help you." He didn't say, as I would say as a psychotherapist, "Let's work through your anger." He said, "Give up anger." And I took that as a spiritual charge, as a message. And that when I experienced anger, instead of trying to figure out why I experienced the anger, which kind of kept investing it, I would just start to do breathing and Ram and start to go into devotional practice and just let go, even though the same anger would come back up again. At one point, I was studying with a very beautiful man named Anagarika Manindra. He was a Theravadan Buddhist teacher. Lovely, lovely man. And I came to him one time and I said to him, "Manindraji, I am so angry," because I had so much anger in me for so many years. And keeping grudges, those deep things that always cut you off. Every time that person's conscious, the thought of that person goes through your head, you constrict. And he said, "Ram Dass, don't hold on to it. It's just old karma running off. Your anger is just old karma running off." And one of the traps that I saw that I was caught in was the trap of righteousness that I used to justify my anger. But I saw that love freed me back into the ocean and that anger didn't. and that I would rather be free than right. And that's a scary and big one. And that if somebody does an abhorrent action, I have to cultivate the capacity to, as Kabir said, and Maharaj used to quote, Kabir said, do what you do with another being, but never put them out of your heart. Do what you do with another being, but never put them out of your heart. That is a total prescription for social activists. Oppose, stand up, defy, confront, do what you do with another person. You stop their action. You may have to imprison that person so that they don't hurt other people. You do what you must do, but you do it without closing your heart. And I don't mean the fraudulent, oh, I didn't close my heart. I mean really. The quality of do what you do, but do it always in the presence of the beloved. There is an incredible poem that most of you know by Thich Nhat Hanh, very beautiful Vietnamese monk. Do not say that I'll depart tomorrow, because even today I still arrive. Look at me. I arrive in every second to be a bud on a spring branch, to be a tiny bird whose wings are still fragile, to be a caterpillar in the heart of a flower, to be a jewel hiding itself in a stone. I still arrive in order to laugh and to cry, in order to fear and to hope. The rhythm of my heart is the birth and death of all that are alive. I am the mayfly metamorphizing on the surface of the river. I am also the bird which, when spring comes, arrives in time to eat the mayfly. I am a frog swimming happily in the clear water of a pond. I am also the grass snake who, approaching in silence, feeds itself on the frog. I am the child in Uganda, all skin and bones, my legs as thin as bamboo sticks. I am also the merchant of arms selling deadly weapons to Uganda. I am the 12-year-old girl refugee on a small boat who throws herself into the ocean after being raped by a sea pirate. I am also the pirate, my heart not yet capable of seeing and loving. I am a member of the Politburo, with plenty of power in my hands. I am also the man who has to pay his debt of blood to my people, dying slowly in a forced labor camp. My joy is like spring, so warm it makes flowers bloom in all walks of life. My pain is like a river of tears, so full it fills up all the four oceans. Please, call me by my correct names so that I can hear at the same time all my cries and my laughs. so that I could see that my joy and my pain are but one. Please call me by my correct names so that I could become awake, so that the door of my heart be left open, the door of compassion. Who is it that you don't love? Who is it that your heart closes to? Yourself? Someone else? The practice is clear. You start a practice. I've kidded a lot about what I've done that in this puja, this beautiful puja that's developing, that at one point I saw that there was somebody who closed my heart, and his name was Caspar Weinberger, and he was the Secretary of Defense. And I didn't like what he was doing, and I didn't like him. I thought he was a righteous jerk. So I thought, I've got work to do with Caspar. So I took a picture of Caspar, and I stuck it on my puja table. And there was Buddha and Christ and the Divine Mother and Mary and Ananda Maima and Caspar Weinberger. And in the morning, I'd light my candle and my incense and, ah, Buddha. Oh, Christ. Maharaji. Ananda Maima. Hello, Caspar. I saw how far I had to go. See? And it was just a practice of seeing this poor schlep of a soul who had this really heavy-duty incarnation to go through of being a jerk. And I was busy responding to the incarnation rather than to the essence. And it was like the two levels. It's like having bifocals and you're looking down when you should be looking up. What you find, though, is that there are people that represent things that are so close to stuff that you're stuck with, attached to, that there's aversive to you, that you project outward into them, and then you hate them. And it's really partly, it's all projection, actually. And as Lama Suryadas said, rest your weary mind. Rest your weary mind. And keep coming back into the quality of awareness, which is really the quality of love. It's the quality of merged love. There's an incredible poem. It's called From a Norman Crucifix, 1632, by Charles Cosley. I am the great sun, but you do not see me. This poem is God love talking to you. I am the great sun, but you do not see me. I am your husband, but you turn away. I am the captive, but you do not free me. I am the captain, you will not obey. I am the truth, but you will not believe me. I am the city where you will not stay. I am your wife, your child, but you will leave me. I am that God to whom you will not pray. I am your counsel, but you do not hear me. I am the lover whom you will betray. I am the victor, but you do not cheer me. I am the holy dove whom you will slay. I am your life, but if you will not name me, seal up your soul with tears and never blame me. The process, we grow up, we become separate, we get caught in our separateness, we are hungry for the coming back into love of the merging place, the namaste place, the place where when you're in yours and I'm in mine, we are in love together. We are in a place where your heart mind and my heart mind remain always inseparable. We get hungry and we finally break out through one technique or another, through loving somebody, perhaps your baby or your parent or your cat or somebody safe, somebody abstract, or a Christ or a Maharaji or somebody, and you open and it feels so good to be in love. And in the path of devotion, you get so addicted to that experience of the intimacy between the lover and the beloved. That you keep being drawn into the singing and the stories and the images and the remembrance of, and you're just thinking about it and tuning all the time just to stay in that intimate loving relationship with that which you love. And then there's this little shift where you start to ask the question, what isn't God? And then you start to look at all the different faces and aspects and see, watch your heart close around judgment. And then you practice opening it and looking and loving this as a manifestation of the beloved. Something that is the way the beloved is taking form. And then the love starts to get vast, and then it starts to get more impersonal. This is a quote from Anandamayi Ma, great, great, great saint. Incredible, incredible being. She said, this body has lived with father, mother, husband, and all. This body has served the husband, so you may call it a wife. It has prepared dishes for all, so you may call it a cook. It has done all sorts of scrubbing and menial work, so you may call it a servant. But if you look at the thing from another standpoint, you'll realize that this body has served none but God. For when I served my father, mother, husband, and others, I merely considered them as different manifestations of the Almighty and served them as such. When I sat down to prepare food, I did so as if it were a ritual, for the food cooked was, after all, meant for God. Whatever I did it in a spirit of divine service. Hence, I was not quite worldly, though always engaged in household affairs. I had but one ideal, to serve all as God, to do everything for the sake of God. But listen to this one of hers also. You all love this body so much that you often come to see me, unmindful of the long distance that many of you have to travel. Yet it is true that this body has no relationship with any of you except the kinship of the Atma, meaning the source, the truth, the love, which this body enjoys equally not only with each of you, but even with all trees, creepers, and foliage around, as well as with rocks, mountains, and everything else. I really want you to hear that one, because that's the one that changes romantic love into that expanding conscious love. And what I have experienced over these years is that transformation, and there have been very frightening aspects, because the cultural models of romantic love have to do with specialness. I love you specially. And what I experience is that I don't love people specially. I have special work to do with one person or another, but I love beings, and I'm getting to love universe, and I'm getting to love the manifestation. And it's interesting, because people keep wanting you to love them specially. And I don't feel it anymore. I don't feel it anymore. And it's a strange experience. It's strange from a cultural point of view. Is that too weird, or can you hear the issue? It's a transformation that goes on. And so and at first, when it starts to happen, we're going to stop in about a couple of minutes. Sorry we didn't take a break, but that's life. Holding in your pee is important for developing a real understanding of love. That because you have initially identified that feeling of love to somebody else with a quality of possessiveness, or collecting them, or wanting them around. I'll tell you what happened to me. I started to guide people through acid trips back in the 60s. And I take the acid with them, and we both go into the place of merging, of just beyond separate. We were in love. And then the session would be over, Saturday night would be over, and there'd be Sunday. And then we'd be parting in the beautiful morning mist, listening to the Messiah. And they had never had a thing like this before. And they would say, "When can I see you again?" Can you imagine? You've just been with somebody in total love, and then you're about to part, and you say, see, there's where the fear comes in, and the lack of faith, and the doubt. When will I see you again? Like a little bit of And I'd say, well, why don't we have dinner Wednesday night? And then it became like every Wednesday night we'd have dinner. Because that's what you do with a beloved, you know, like, let's hang out. So then I ran a second session. And the next day the person said, when will I see you again? I said, well, how about Thursday night? Okay. And after I had run six sessions, I went to my teacher, Tim Leary, and I said, Tim, I don't think I can guide any more sessions. I don't have any more evenings free. And at that point, I realized I was going to have to up-level the thing. I was going to have to take it up to another level of loving people, where if we have a moment of truth of love, this is what we've got. And the clinging of the mind comes out of the fear that says, I want to possess it because I may run out of love later. And when you leap out of that, and go into the next space, realizing that every time you turn around, there is another form of the beloved. It's interesting because I'm a wanderer. Maharaji said, Ramdas should not stay in one place. He should keep moving around because yogis like water tend to go bad if they stay in one place too long. And not bad in the evil sense, but bad in the clinging, habitual way of having a building around you, a kind of a cocoon of safe emotional space. And it's much different when you're on the road all the time and you're meeting motel keepers and they're your host for that moment, and on and on and on, and airport people and all that. Is that the beloved? Are you traveling with the beloved, or are you waiting to get home to the beloved? And there was a moment where I was sitting in a motel in middle America, and it was one of those really plasticky Holiday Inn type places, and I had arrived and I went into my room and I sat down and I was starting to set up my little puja table on the plastic thing and, you know, all that stuff, moving the menu and stuff, and sitting there, and it was kind of depressing, and I thought, well, a few more weeks and I'll be done with this tour and I can go home. And then I saw the pain that that thought was creating for me. And I got up and I walked out of the room, closed the door, walked down the hall, turned around, came back, unlocked the door and yelled, I'm home. And I came in and I sat down and I looked and, you know, I wouldn't have decorated particularly this way, but, you know, what the hell, you know. I thought, if I'm not at home in the universe, boy, I got a problem. I got a problem. If I say I can only be home here, not there. What is home? Home is where the heart is. Home is the quality of presence. It's the quality of being wherever you are. But when you've gone from the hunger, the hungry sponge, looking for somebody to love and finding somebody and then wanting to hold them and have them around because you're afraid you might run out later, and you know how horrible that is, and then you start to cultivate these inner qualities of spaciousness and awareness, and you begin to feel this love, not in a possessive way, but in a like light pouring out of you, and you just love people just because they are. You love things because they are. You see the manifestation, the awe, the mystery of the divine in form. When that starts to happen, you still have your old models of possession going. They haven't been burned out yet. So when you love the second person, you want to collect them too. And then the third person, you want to collect them too. I usually kid about my story is that you fall in love with somebody and you nest and you collect feathers and build a nest and straw and drapes and stuff. And then you need to go to the supermarket and you get, yogurt and beer, and you're at the checkout counter and you look into the eyes of the person at the checkout counter and the thing happens again because the eyes are the windows of the soul. And you're in love. Because now you're starting to function from this place. When you're in this place, everybody you look at is your lover. When you are in love, you see love where you look. So you look, and but your old model is, I got to collect this. My God, this is great. We are in love, and it's the checkout person. Okay? So the question is, have you considered a ménage à trois? Are you opposed to open marriages, you know? But then what's going to happen? You walk down the street and you look and there's another one. Pretty soon you're the Adamite community or one of those kind of things, you know, and the politics get so complicated. Plus the emotions of everybody that thinks they're the special, you know, the first of this, the first one. And you realize you've got to graduate from a deprivation model to an abundance model. And I don't mean that in the kind of cheesy way it's often used. It's abundant, so I can have it. It's abundant because you are it. That as you become love, you get to the point where you walk down the street and somebody comes and it is the most beautiful thing again that you have ever seen again. And you look and you look and you appreciate and you love and your eyes may meet and you both recognize the love and you don't have to do anything about it. So you go through from come live with me to let's have coffee together to would you give me your number to how about a calling card to a wink to are you experiencing what I'm experiencing? Wasn't this great? Fantastic. Or God is love or and then you just looking at your beloved. And it's nothing special to be in love. It's nothing special. It's very ordinary. How alien that is in this culture to think that being in love with the universe is ordinary. Is ordinary. This has been a lot this morning. This has been a lot. Just take all these words back into the silence behind the words. Kabir said, since the day I met with my Lord, there has been no end to the sport of our love. I see with eyes open and smile, and behold the beauty everywhere. I utter the Lord's name, and whatever I see, it reminds me. Whatever I do, it becomes worship. The goddess is everywhere. Anybody you have ever touched in true love, that love still is present. Where can it go? Anyone who you've closed your heart to with your mind, rest your weary mind. Praise God for the light within us. Praise in us. Praise God.